today, man.
Wow, and your dad gave you a gun.
Yeah, man, let me show it to you. I know how to work it real well. He's ready to build some bullets, gun, and everything, man. I know all about it.
Wow, your own gun.
Yeah, man, watch this.
Thank you. That, my friends, was one of the greatest songs in rock and roll. That was Mr. Destroyer off of Pooh Bah's first album, Let Me In. And Jim, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, man. This is our guest is Jim Gustafson from Pooh Bah. So I made a typo on the show page for tonight. I said 4 decades. You've been doing this for 50 years, man.
That's right.
72 to 2022.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Take your vitamins and don't overindulge in too many things.
Fair enough. So I know a couple of things are going on with the band recently. You guys are having stuff re-released on Ripple Music. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, we've got 2 albums on that label now, and we have another one coming out. I'm thinking it's going to be here by May.
Cool.
Somewhere around there, and it'll be a 2-record set.
Nice.
Called Burning in the Rain.
Cool. And these are vinyl they're releasing, right?
Vinyl and CD also, and download and all the regular places.
Yep, all the things the kids do these days.
That is correct.
Cool, man. And the other thing that I wanted to mention right at the top of the show was you guys have a cover on a tribute album?
Yes, Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah, so what's the story behind that? And we will play that song later. We'll play your cover.
Well, there's this record producer from Italy, Giancarlo Bolter, and he contacted me. He had seen photos of me with some of the members of Blue Oyster Cult because I had been asked to play second guitar for Blue Oyster Cult member Joe Bouchard. I did some shows with him in Ohio.
Nice.
And, and he saw those photos and stuff, and he told me that I would probably be good as a candidate for the bands that were going to be on the Blue Oyster Cult tribute called Dark Side of the Cult. And so I went in the studio and I recorded my version of Godzilla. I really like how it came out. It's really fun.
Awesome. Hey, do you mind if we go to the track now?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Oh, coolness, man.
Some guitars.
All right.
Godzilla by Pooh Bah.
I'm not getting anything, Phil. Aux one. With a purple smoke, grimace of a terrible sight, pulls the spinning high tension wires down. Helpless people on the subway train scream back out as he looks in lonely. He picks up a bus and he throws it back down as he waves through the buildings in the center of town. All right, that was Poobah doing Godzilla off of the Dark Side of the Cult album, a tribute to Blue Oyster Cult. Jim, man, that was amazing.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you know, I'm always skeptical when a band covers a hard rock classic because sometimes they just don't do it heavier. And in my mind, if you're going to cover a hard rock song, it should be as hard or harder. And your guitar on this, man, just kicks ass. And the sense of humor comes through. It's freaking awesome. I really, really dig it.
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right, so this is the producer here. I got to ask, so was this song chosen for you for this tribute record?
No. I was booked at the Cleveland Rock and Roll Hall of Fame along with some of the members of Alice Cooper and Blue Oyster Cult. And the next year, I went back again, and again, members of Alice Cooper and Blue Oyster Cult were also doing the same show as me, the Goldmine show at Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I got a phone call, and I didn't recognize the number. I almost didn't answer it. I thought, probably some hacker. Anyway, something made me answer the phone, and it was the bass player from Blue Oyster Cult, Joe Bouchard. Mm-hmm. On all their hits. And he asked me, he goes, hey, I see that Poobah's playing the same show as me this weekend at the Rock Hall. He goes, would you guys mind being my backup band? Wow, right, man, you got it. So then we went to a friend of mine's house in Cleveland and rehearsed. And then the next day we went and played like four times or something. And it was really cool. Everybody loved it there. There's a video of it on YouTube.
Nice. Very nice. So, Jim, if you can indulge us, I know in every interview they ask you to sort of do the history of the band, but can you give us, like, I'm more interested in the scene as you were starting as a musician. You know, what were the clubs like? What were the audiences like? Give us, like, a sense of the feel.
Well, one thing that was different was the beer age was earlier.
So that's got to help rock and roll, right?
Yeah, it helped all the bars. You know, they had younger clients and more of them.
Nice.
And I think that a lot of them were moved by the music.
Oh, I would.
Really seemed to. I mean, it just seemed to be such a cool scene that we were in. I made my first record when I was 15, and that really, we got a lot of airplay on the local radio, and boy, that sure made life better for me. It really did.
Nice. Very nice.
And I found out how much fun I could have.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling really, you know, I was bitten by that recording bug right then. And then again, a couple of years later, I made another record with a band called, that first one was called Days Ends, E-N-D-Z.
Uh-huh.
It was four. Guys are out there. They're very collectible.
Cool.
It's called What I Do. And written by me.
Nice.
That was my first guitar solo and the first song I ever sang the lead vocal on.
Cool.
And another interesting thing about that 45 is, you know, a few years later, the same bass player that played on that 45 is also the bass player on the first three Poobah albums.
Wow. And who is that?
Phil Jones.
Nice.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, cool, man. Cool. So, yeah.
Go ahead. What was you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you to sort of, you know, what was it about rock that you first got interested in it as a music? I mean, it sounds kind of dumb because I think every kid instinctively likes rock and roll. But, like, what was the first song you heard, like the first rock song?
Well, I'm thinking it was the Beatles. No, I take that back because my dad had that 45 of Hound Dog by Elvis Presley. So that I played the crap out of that song.
Awesome.
And then he had another record in his collection at Everly Brothers, Wake Up Little Susie. I've heard that song so many times it's embedded in my brain because he only had like five 45s and I played them and played them and played them.
Nice. So, Poobah got together after Biggie Rat, is that correct?
Yeah, after about 3 years, Biggie Rat went their separate ways.
Cool.
He ended up starting another version of Biggie Rat later and asked me to play guitar, and I would have if things hadn't been going my way with Puba. I was getting all this airplay, and I was making more money now with my new band, and plus I was the singer instead of somebody else.
Right.
Just being the original singer, and I like that. Who wouldn't, huh?
Yeah, exactly, man, exactly. So back in the day, like 72, I know Let Me In came out. Did that sort of start the band off as sort of a bigger regional band?
Well, I had a lot of success with Biggie Rat.
So you were sort of a known entity.
So I was already popular as a guitarist in that, those regions that we've covered.
Mm-hmm.
We did play in Nashville with our Jimi Hendrix bassist, Billy Cox, band right after Hendrix had passed away. He formed a band called Nitro Function. We opened for them at the Electric Flag in Nashville.
Damn, I've played them on the show, actually. That's pretty
cool.
After
I got to know Billy Cox, he actually said he really loved my songwriting and suggested that maybe I should join up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very flattered. Who wouldn't be? But
yeah,
at the time, I thought I was going to make it with my own band, and I didn't want to jump ship and go do something, even with somebody as fabulous as him. And I probably should have done that, but I was a dumb kid. I think I was 19.
Cool.
But there I was, 19 years old, in a recording studio with Jimi Hendrix's bass player.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
I mean, it just blows my mind. And now I can call Billy up and go see his shows and get to go backstage and stuff. It's so cool for me.
Nice. That's nice. Now, you, in addition to Billy Cox, you've, you know, opened for or shared the stage with lots and lots of, like, early 70s heavies, man. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like, it's over a paragraph long of the bands that you've played with.
And there's more than that. I didn't list them all.
Why not?
That was Phil.
I couldn't remember how to spell their name.
That's all right, man. I have a stack of tickets in a cigar box at my mom's house that of concerts I don't even remember going to. Yeah, it's like, it must have been great. I don't remember it. But those were different times.
Yes, there were.
Cool. Now, you mentioned that Billy Cox recognized your talent as a songwriter. And one of the things that I do want to say is that on Classic Rock Mine, I've only focused on, like, your harder songs. But every album you do, I believe, has a variety of sounds on it, where some of them are sort of tender and some of them are sort of, you know, spacey, and then some of them are just, you know, balls to wall rock.
Well, I think that I was really influenced by bands like Hendrix and Cream and the Beatles,
mm-hmm,
and the Stones, and all of that music fusing into my brain, and then with these other ideas I had about doing these lightning fast guitar solos and stuff and rock songs, you know, and people told me, you can't do that. Well, you watch me.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, you
know, I'll play that fast in a rock song. Now stop it.
Man. And that was sort of the age of speed. Certainly, like, from Ohio bands and bands out of Detroit, everybody was like, as fast as they could. But yours is very melodic. You know, you're not just like shredding as fast as you can for no reason.
I want to agree with that because that's what I was hoping to achieve.
Awesome.
Because anybody can just make a bunch of quick noise.
Mm-hmm.
Can you also make a melody with it?
Yeah.
And I'm not putting anybody down or doing anything. If they're having fun, good for them. I just like to do what I like to do, and I just feel very fortunate that anybody wants to listen to it.
Man, and how many albums have you done now?
I think I have recorded 19 or 20 of them.
Well, how many do we know about?
Getting The 15th one's getting ready for official release.
Mm-hmm.
That Burning in the Rain.
Yep. When's that come out?
That should come out, I don't know, around May or June.
Mm-hmm. And is that going to be on Ripple?
Yes, Ripple Music in California will be releasing that on 2LP and CD.
Nice.
And download.
Mm-hmm. So,
and there's a lot of guitar. Yeah, there's a lot of wild rocking guitar, but yet there's all kinds of melodies that stick in your head, too. It's not all 20-minute jams and then the next song, 20-minute jams.
Right, 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 which gets
cut. Not either. If somebody likes that, good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their thing. I try to like as much of it as I can. Even if I've never heard anything like it before, I try to understand it.
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of your songwriting and the music, where does that inspiration come from? Like, if you're writing a song or you're playing with a riff, what are you drawing upon?
I'm not sure where it comes from, but mm-hmm. it just comes in my head, and I like have these flash of ideas. Mm-hmm. And I start hearing these melodies, and the next thing you know, my mind has this category of where I file the lyrics and I file the music, and I somehow remember it and go home and mash it out until I've completed a song that will be ready to be recorded.
Nice.
The vocal. Yeah.
And what's the creative process in terms of when you're playing live and you're soloing? I assume you're not playing note for note what's on the album.
Well, I don't knock anybody that wants to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's more fun to be able to be creative and inspire your mind to do other things besides, as long as it still keeps the feel of the song so you don't alienate the people who want to hear it a certain way.
Mm.
Good. But it always... it's cool to be able to play it something like that, but maybe added something that you find that was really also you wished was on that.
Oh, man. Okay, let's go to some music. What would you say if we heard, let's see, how about something off a Steamroller?
Oh, yeah, I really like that album from 1979.
Yeah, cool. And which album? That was third album?
Yep. That was Me, Judd, and Phil.
Nice.
Yeah, we had.
Cool. All right. Let's go for title track. Does that work for you? Something else you don't want to hear from it?
No, that's a great song.
It is, man. I've played it before. Cool. All right. So this is Poobah with Steamroller, off of Steamroller. Dig it and dig it deep.
Baby, too, I desire.
Dang, that was Steamroller off of Steamroller by Poobah. That came out in 79. Is that correct, Jim?
That is correct, and it's going to be reissued probably in the next year or so.
Nice. Nice. Nice and heavy, nice and, like, throbbing. If I can say throbbing on the radio, and I think I can.
I'm glad you like it. I'm glad anybody does.
Yeah. Well, let's actually talk about the Steamroller album, because that was after a brief break of time, right? Like, the first two came out pretty close. Let Me In and U.S. Rock. Do I have this correct?
72, 76, and 79.
Oh, so not really. Cool. Nice. And
an unreleased album made in 73 and partial album in 74 that the 73 tracks ended up as the second bonus disc on the new reissue of Let Me In on Ripple Music.
Nice. Nice.
And that's available now. You can get that on a 2LP or CD or LED.
Cool. So now, back in the day, back in the 70s, how often were you gigging?
Really a lot.
Yeah.
Usually about 5 nights a week.
Wow.
And traveling all over the place. I mean, we got to see so many towns and meet so many cool people and meet so many beautiful girls.
Well, that's part of the reason, right?
It was a dream for a young man.
Yeah.
To get to do all that. I mean, and be treated nicely by a lot of people. I mean,
that's cool.
I can understand how some people, you know, can't handle any kind of fame and become poopheads.
So, what was the audience like? I mean, this is not like Juilliard music. This is like heavy stuff. So, was it like, you know, were these people who had just, you know, got out of a factory, or were they just kids, or were they like, you know, they're showing up to the show to burn off energy, or what do you think?
Well, what really surprised me is how diverse the age groups would be that would come and see our band.
Wow.
It would just surprise me. You know, we'd go play at some teen center, and there'd be 1,100 people there and going nuts.
Damn.
And then we'd get playing some field, and all these people were dressed up like hippies and dancing and wanting to go on and not letting you quit.
Do you have any specifically memorable gigs from that era?
Well, I can remember we did this show with Canned Heat and Foghat and Spirit and Cactus.
Oh, my God.
And they beat so many people. There was, you know, 11,000 people there or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spirit came up to me and said, "Hey, look, we got another gig tonight. Will you guys play after us instead of before us?"
You're kidding.
I was like, "Are you joking?" He goes, "No, I'm very serious. We want to be able to get paid twice today, and you'd really be helping us." I said, "Well, I understand that. You guys came a long way."
Damn.
And so they went on before Pooba.
So,
you know, imagine that. They had that hit record, "I Got a Love."
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they opened for Pooba.
So what
the... Like three more times.
Wow.
After that.
So what was that like? I mean, they've got a slightly different vibe than Pooh-Bah does. So after their fans have just heard Spirit and you come on, what was the reaction?
Well, we really did well.
Awesome.
Somebody there that saw us, and then we got several other shows after that. We ended up playing with Canned Heat again and Quicksilver Messenger Service and Cactus again and in Maryland and then in Wheeling, West Virginia and then Akron, Ohio.
Nice.
And that was Erie, Pennsylvania, that show.
Oh, that was in Erie. Cool.
Foghat was wearing these cool sequin green suits. They look like rockers, I'm telling you. These men.
So,
I went to a show. I saw the James Cotton Blues Band.
Yeah.
And there was a guy there that had a blues sequin suit on. And he was, I can't remember what his name was, a harmonica player.
Well, nice.
Sorry about changing that subject.
No, man, that's fine. That's fine. I think Phil has a question for you.
Yeah. Did you ever come up this way, like New England, Boston, Massachusetts?
I've been to Delaware and Vermont and all over New York State and Canada. I did like 20 shows in Canada, but I don't think I ever made it to Massachusetts, although I wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, I heard it was a great rock and roll area.
Yep.
In the 70s, it absolutely was.
I'd like get it planned, and then somebody quit the band, and we'd sit down the pole for 6 months or something. And sometimes it's just like you have this crew, and everybody's trained for a specific job.
Yep.
And if somebody decides to find religion or he's in love with the bill in another state and has to go there.
I had a question I completely forgot.
A year later, he's calling you up. Can I be back in the band?
Only if God says so.
I'm sorry, let me back in the band.
So, were you self-managing the band through most of the years of Poobah?
I did, or I at least became involved in it so that we didn't make no money.
Good, yeah.
A lot of my friends, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Many horror stories from people I thought would have done way better financially, even though they made a name for themselves.
Right.
It reminds me of that Tom Petty song, "You Get to Be Famous, I Get to Be Rich."
Yeah. Yeah, fame and fortune do not necessarily go together.
Especially these days.
Yeah.
And then there's also so many poor, unfortunate souls that make choices that ruin their careers as they're starting to get famous.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you asked me via text before the show how I discovered Poobah. And I had been collecting classic rock since I was like 14. I know I was born in 65. I had an older sister. She played me Revolution and Valerie by the Monkees. Those were the 245 she had. And my musical taste never changed. I heard those when I was 3. So started collecting vinyl, collected everything I went. I'd go to the stores and I'm like, I already have all these. Go online looking for... looking through specialty catalogs of sort of more obscure bands or regional bands, and I came across Poobah, and I'm like, this is what I should be playing on the show. These are the bands that need to be heard. It's like, it's great music, and for a variety of reasons, these bands never got the airplay they deserved. Man, if Poobah was in rotation in Philly, you guys, you would have been monsters. You really would have. And along with a lot of the other bands I play, it's just sad that, like, you know, part of it's like the business end, and then part of it is just the personalities of the artists who, you know, go off in a different direction or they lose their minds or whatever.
Well, I don't really know how I got to be a collectible artist where so many people want my original vinyls. It just kind of happened. In fact, you know, if there was an easy route to doing that. None I know of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
a lot of famous people are just shocked that the people bought their stuff.
Yeah.
Because I have so many friends that they made some good records and stuff, but they just, nobody had any money at the time, or they didn't try hard enough, or they just bad luck.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the other part that really I find inspiring in you, Jim, is that you've kept going and you've stayed true to your voice. You haven't jumped on a bandwagon. You haven't, like, you know, gone all like synth and samples as the times technology have changed. It's just great rock and roll.
Well, thank you for that. And I just like to do what I like to do. And if I had enough success to find a way to keep doing it and keep releasing albums of music that I like.
Yep.
Without somebody telling me I have to have this hit single.
Mm-hmm.
or I'm fired.
Yeah, right. You're not going to fire yourself.
If the record don't sell, Sonny, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. And on the flip side, I've heard famous bands who started out in like clubs run by the mob. You know, especially like I can name several huge New York bands who, you know, they were managed by the mafia because the mafia owned the club where they played. They were the house band. The mafia, you know, paid for their demo or their first album or whatever in that. And then when they got out of that, it went away.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 I'll tell you some band names off air. It's yeah. I was really surprised. And some of them, it was kind of ugly to get out. And some of them, it was like a parting of the ways kind of thing. But what was I going to ask? Oh, yeah. In terms of your audience, how's it changed? I mean, 50 years. How like who's showing up now compared to who was showing up then? Is it the same sort of variety of people?
One thing that's helped us is, for some reason, younger people seem to like the songs, and they're coming to the shows along with the older people.
Mm-hmm.
Been amazing.
Yeah.
We played at Youngstown, Ohio last week in Boardman.
Mm-hmm.
And a big old crowd, and there was people there that were 20 and people there that were 70. I mean, really, it's a diverse amount of crowd, and they hollered out tuba songs and stuff. It was really great for us.
Wow. You know, personally, I can see why, because I feel like hard rock has sort of stagnated since the whole grunge movement. I really haven't seen much development in the sound, and it's sort of like the lead guitar thing, at least in songs that get airplay, has sort of taken a backseat to this sort of, you know, almost wall of sound Seattle type thing. And I don't see the originality. I don't see the uniqueness of the music that's played anymore, you know? And it's almost like they got too complicated. They got too far in their head and too far from their groin. And for me, rock and roll, it's the groin. It hits you, you know, it makes you sneer. It makes you put your fist in the air. It's like an emotional reaction. And I just don't see that anymore.
Well, I can't speak for the world, but I really like great guitar songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd buy all kinds of albums from famous bands with good guitar players.
Nice. And you've played with a ton of them. I just want to read off a couple of the paragraphs that I have. Let's see. Glass Harp, Mitch Ragger in Detroit, Wheels, Brownville Station, Slade, who are like one of my favorite bands in the world, Alice Cooper, Can Heat, Spirit, Judas Priest, Ted Nugent, Cheech and Chong, and John Entwistle and Keith Moon were in your audience at one point, correct?
Along with Pete Townsend.
Along with Pete Townsend. All right, you got to tell the story about that, because that's surprising.
Okay. Well, we got booked in Cleveland on a Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing in like what was considered to be the top music club in Cleveland, the Agora.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I know from the Agora.
And we were just a little bit tired, because on Tuesday night, me and the bass player drove 2 hours to Pittsburgh each way.
Mm-hmm.
To see The Who.
Mm-hmm.
So after a rocking concert by The Who in Pittsburgh, the next night we're booked and we're playing in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I see in the paper that on Thursday night, the next night, The Who is playing in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, here comes Keith Moon and John Entwistle on the road. He's walking into the bar. And we're like just stunned, me and Scott Hunter, and we could not even believe that the people that we drove to Pittsburgh last night to see are now sitting there at the bar watching us.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So did you get to meet them?
Well, we ended about a half hour later,
mm-hmm.
our set over, and we ran over there and shook hands, took pictures with them.
Nice.
And I asked John Entwistle so many questions. How many cars you got? How many houses you got? How do you like traveling? Who's your favorite guitar player?
And how did he react? Was he cool with it?
He was so nice to me. And then at the end of like our 2 hours there, mm-hmm. he goes, "Hey, would you like free passes for the concert tomorrow night?"
Nice.
With your band.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I said, "That's so awesome." So he gave us backstage passes.
Mm-hmm.
So the next night, I was back there. I was checking out Roger Daltrey with two chicks at once. Beautiful girls. And Pete Townshend was running in place back there, backstage.
Wow.
And that guy had energy, man. He put on a hell of a show.
Nice.
Great matter. And John Entwistle was so nice to us.
Mm-hmm.
He really was a nice guy. I'm sorry to hear that he's passed away.
Yeah, no kidding, man. No kidding.
The music of The Who will live on, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, I am pleasantly surprised that there are still classic rock stations. I mean, I have a problem with the lack of variety, but there's still classic rock stations in every major city in this country. There's still an audience, and it ain't all people our age. I mean, I'm a little younger than you, but there's, like, you know, generations keep rediscovering classic rock, you know? So you still hear Zeppelin on the radio. You still hear The Who. You still hear, you know, more recent bands than that, but you still hear, you know, the guys that really put the sound on the map nationally and internationally.
Yeah, those are some great bands.
Cool. All right. Well, speaking of great bands, let's play something from Poobah. Phil, what do you got queued up? Do you have anything queued up?
No, I was waiting for a suggestion.
All right. How about something off of U.S. Rock? Jim?
Cool.
U.S. Rock, what tune would you like?
How about Through These Eyes?
You got it, Phil? Awesome. Yep. Through These Eyes by Poobah. Dig it and dig it deep.
Through these eyes, I think I see beyond the skies. feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Anyone 5 WMFO Medford.